Thursday of the month from 8 till midnight. You're listening to LFM.
Good evening, merry meet, and welcome to Down the Nile Backwards. This evening we've got a bit of a summer festival special with the Pagan Festival of Lammas fast approaching, and also with us being in the middle of the festival season, I'd like to introduce my co-presenter, Ellen.
Hello. You'll notice a bit different this month. We're missing our third co-host, Ryan. He's gone away on holiday. And we've also had a bit of a swap around this month, and we've had Sarah in charge. So we have her to thank for all the wonderful things we have to come tonight.
Sure, or to thank for the show being somewhat behind schedule on a wing and a prayer. We're going to have some cooking shortly with a bit of a Lammas theme as well. We've got music from one of Ellen's friends, who is a band who's going to be at Edinburgh, Suitcase Royale. And we've also got a bit of a festivals feature with our guests, Dan and Chris. And as well as our usual Arts for Under a Tenor panel featuring Julie, Dave and Gaz.
Hello.
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 So, Sarah, what have you been up to culturally since our last meet?
Well, it's been a busy month. Of course, a lot of festivals going on around. Probably part being, I went to the Wireless Festival in Hyde Park. Bit of a corporate event, but Slash from Guns N' Roses was playing, so I could not miss that one. Especially as I'm going to Reading to see the rest of Guns N' Roses at the end of August. Something else looking forward to.
So if you put the two together in your mind.
I'll have seen the whole of Guns N' Roses by the end of the summer, yeah. A lifelong ambition. How about you?
Well, what with the build-up to the Edinburgh Festival, I've been going around and seeing lots of Edinburgh previews, including, as you mentioned, the Suitcase Royale, who we went and saw at Battersea Arts Centre last Friday.
We saw them doing knees up, wasn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, we saw them doing the music part of their act, but their whole show is it's quite an interesting sort of thing. It's sort of Australian Gothic Outback Tales. They're a fantastic act, definitely worth checking out, but we'll be playing them later, as you said.
And the name's quite relevant, isn't it? Because a lot of their instruments, they improvise from like found objects and... I think the bass player actually plays a bass made out of a suitcase.
This is cheap that he made himself, so it's quite an interesting sound they've got there. And I also saw them for the first time at Latitude, which big festival sort of in terms of the arts, less music, more on the kind of theatre, comedy, literary stuff. Gaz was there as well, weren't you, Gaz?
Yeah, I was probably more interested in the comedy and the literary stuff than the bands, actually. But yeah.
Really any good. Highlights?
Meeting Bret Easton Ellis, just oh, really? Because... yeah, he was a really interesting guy, and it was at a book signing. It's not like it was, you know, hi Brett, let's go for a drink type thing. But, you know, it was cool. He was really, really approachable, and probably could have just paid £17 for his book.
But, yeah.
I don't know, it was good fun.
Cool. Okay, so...
So moving on, I think since we haven't got a musical guest this month, we're going to do a bit of a Lammas theme thing.
What is Lammas?
Lammas, it's the pagan festival that celebrates the first harvest. So it's usually on August the 1st, but with the Celtic pagan way of measuring the days, it starts sundown the day before. So it's going to be Saturday night. Starting, but so we're a bit ahead of time. But the actual original festival would run for about a month, with August the 1st being the midpoint, which fits in with us being in the middle of the festival season as well. And okay. Season of celebration, the first harvest comes in, and you give thanks to the gods that you have finally the hungry season is over, you have something to eat, and also pray for rain for the rest of the harvest to be good, which is something that we could probably do with the way London's been the last month or so. We could really do with some good rain. So we're going to make a blueberry pie this evening. Another name for Lammas is Lunasa, and also Bilberry Sunday was a sort of a Christianisation of the name. So blueberry or bilberry pie is like a traditional dish.
Okay.
That.
So what sort of thing do people generally do at Lammas?
Lunasa,
like the Brian Field play,
yes,
dancing.
Exactly.
Yes, okay.
So lots of dancing, lots of music, and little rituals around sort of the first harvest and bringing in the corn. One ritual is that people would make corn dollies and they would keep them until the following year, and then they, on the same day, they burn the dollies from the last year and make wishes for the coming harvest.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Sorry, what religion is Lammas again? Sorry,
it's
is it religion?
It's,
is it pagan or what?
It's ancient Celtic pagan.
Ah, okay.
But it's still sort of celebrated in Ireland, I understand.
Any blood sacrifice?
No, more like bread sacrifices.
Blueberry sacrifice.
And pie sacrifice, which is what we're going to do tonight. Yeah, also the Christians took it over a bit and had their harvest festival and all that, so it's quite a universal time for celebration, I think. Which we'll do by making blueberry crumble.
You're going to cook now,
yeah.
Are you?
So shall we move over to the kitchen? Now, we're going to have a bit of a move here as we take the microphone on a bit of a wander. So, we're just unhooking that. Now, let me explain about this recipe. It's, we will tweet a link for the different elements of it, but the way I cook is usually just, if it looks right and if it smells right, it's probably okay. So there's not really going to be any sort of volumes of ingredients or anything here. I just hope you can get an idea of, like, you know, the right sort of proportions of the ingredients to each other. I'm going to wash my hands because the cook's always got clean hands, especially if you're going to stick your hands in the crumble.
Is that another pagan thing?
Yeah, I'm washing my hands in the blood of innocence. And take off rings as well, because you don't want to get them covered in flour and butter. It's going to wreck my diamonds. So, what we have here is a bowl of blueberries. They're in season at the moment. You can get them any good supermarket or your local greengrocer. Nice juicy blueberries. To those, we are going to add, I've got a lemon here, and I'm going to grate some of this lemon zest.
Would that be an unwaxed lemon?
An unwaxed lemon, yeah. Do you want to feel it?
No, I'll take your word for it, it's all good.
Yeah, no wax on my lemon.
You want an unwaxed lemon, to put wax around them to make them last a bit longer on the shelf.
Really? Oh,
so,
yeah, I knew that, yeah.
It's not good for...
Maybe that's if you buy a supermarket lemon. So I got this from my local fruit store. Chris Street Market. There you go. Can't beat the market for fresh veg. So getting a good sort of coating of the lemon zest in there. It's quite good, this. The lemon zest just keeps the rest of the blueberries kind of ripe as well. Okay, so I'm going to get my hands in there, give it a good mix around, get them all coated with the lemon zest. Now, if you want, you can add any fruit to this, basically, like any fruit that's in season at the moment. So blackberries, if you've got access to raspberries, anything, if you're lucky enough to have a garden or allotment, any fruit you've got growing at the moment. Apples are also really good. In fact, you can add apples to blueberries, to blackberries, to whatever.
So but you're squeezing the juice of the lemon into these.
I'm putting a bit of lemon juice in with the blueberries as well, just the juice of half a lemon there.
Hey, have you told them to preheat the oven, by the way?
Oh, yeah. You need to preheat the oven to 200 degrees.
I nearly got burnt on it, that's still
nice. These are my lovely assistants here. Hope, who's heated the oven. Gaz, who's given me the hints about the waxed fruit. And Dave, who's...
two,
as a health and safety element,
yeah,
don't stick your hand in a hot oven.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've added some lemon into the fruit. You can put a bit of sugar in if you like, but you probably don't need it because the blueberries are quite sweet anyway, and you're going to put sugar in the crumble topping. And we're doing a crumble tonight because it's kind of easier in the studio kitchen. But feel free, if you've got a nice afternoon to spend making a pie, you can make a nice shortcrust pastry. If you're going to do it with short crisp pastry, you want to make it maybe the night before, leave it in the fridge. So we've got all the blueberries into the pie dish now. I'm going to leave them there. And now for the crumble. Now, making a crumble, it's all about making sure you fold in the ingredients very lightly. It's all about the light finger work. And I'm not measuring the ingredients out. A rough guide is you're having flour, sugar, and butter. You can also add oatmeal. We're gonna add some chopped nuts. Anything that gives it a bit of crunch is quite nice. You really want one part of flour to half a part of butter, or rather one part of butter to two parts of flour. It's a better way of saying it, isn't it? And also one part sugar. No, sorry. Yeah, one part sugar to two parts flour. So I'm gonna get here, I'm gonna have 2 cups of flour. It's a bit of an awkward cup if I do it like this. Yeah, that's better. Whoops. Should have worn an apron for this. There's flour all over the kitchen now. I'm using wholemeal flour as well, just because I think with the butter and the nuts and everything, it just gives it a nice kind of wholesome, crunchy kind of flavour to your crumble. Okay, so then I've left the butter out so it's a bit soft. That makes it a bit easier to work into the crumble.
Is that unsalted butter as well?
It is, yes. Or you can use salted. It depends on your taste. But I think sometimes the salt, especially with the fruit, it just adds something, you know. It just stimulates your taste buds a little bit. Like, yeah. Cutting up the butter. It's very soft. Melting. The kitchen's hot. And just chop the butter into little cubes, and then it's easier to like mix it in. We're going to get our hands really dirty in a minute. Okay, there's the butter going in. I'm going to add some nuts as well, because they'll just bake up and give it a nice crunch to the crumble. So, other traditional lammas recipes, anything bread based, obviously, like celebrating the first grains of the year. Like I said before, any fruit that you get, anything you've got growing in your garden at this time of year, basically, you just eat it all up. Okay. And I'm using kind of quite a shallow pie dish, which is it's quite important for a crumble that the dish isn't too deep, otherwise you'll end up with just a big soggy mess.
Would you say that's just over?
Was it like 2 inches? Yeah. It's deep by what? Maybe 6? No.
I think that's like 12 inches, isn't it? Yeah.
You would say that you're a guy. Is it? No, it's not quite 12 inches. Maybe 10 inch by 4 inch. Yeah?
And then what?
And I put 3 small punnets of blueberries in that.
So it's just under an inch deep of blueberries.
Yeah, about half full of blueberries, and then we're going to top the rest up with a crumble. I also found a recipe that suggested you can put a crumble base on the bottom. Never tried that before. Could be interesting. Have a go at home. Write into the show, let us know how it goes. Having trouble getting into the sugar here because my hands are covered in butter now. Can't grip anything. I'm just going to stab it with a knife. Yeah. Using dark brown sugar because it just caramelised very nicely.
Brown sugar!
As Mick would have said. Okay, it's very soft this as well. I'm using the dark brown sugar, not the Demerara stuff, but you can use that if you like. You can use caster sugar, whatever. And so if you remember, we had like 2 cups of flour. So we're going to use 1 cup of sugar in with that. And we've put about half a cup of nuts in there as well, chopped nuts, ready chopped, that I chopped earlier. Or were chopped in a bag earlier by a man in a factory somewhere. Here we go. Okay, now the fun bit. We've got the butter in there, got the sugar, got the chopped nuts and the flour, and now we're going to get our hands in there and just give it a good rub. And the important thing is to lift the crumble mixture up very high in your hands and just kind of gently rub it between your thumb and forefingers. If you kind of get the lumps of butter and get them nicely covered with the rest of the mixture, and then just kind of work that through your hands. It's like going back to school when you get to play in the sand pit. You find those little wet patches that you probably don't want to know where they came from in a kid's playground. But yeah, anyway, it's just like playing in the sand pit. You give it a nice rub. And then if you've got two big lumps of sugar, you can give it a bit of a rub in between your palms like that. Just work that butter right through. You're basically aiming for all the butter to be melted into the flour in nicely evenly distributed. So it will get quite a nice crumbly texture there. You can sort of see it starting to come together, or you can't see it starting to come together because you're listening in on radio. But I hope you can get an idea.
I can witness it for you.
Can you see this? Can you see how it's coming together? You can see the little lumps starting to form with the butter.
Yeah.
And you need to kind of play it by ear while you've got your hands in there. Does it feel like it needs more butter? Does it feel a bit dry? How is the butter spreading out? You can add more butter if you like, or if you feel like you've got too much butter, just add a bit more flour. You kind of don't want it to feel greasy at all.
No.
But sort of moist as well.
Moist, yeah. Sticky.
Yeah, that's it. Sticky, but
not
sludgy. Because all that butter is going to melt when it's in the oven, and it's going to crisp it all up quite nicely.
While we're here, should we do a little shout out to Agnes, who's listening in at home?
Agnes, good evening. I hope you're getting inspired to try some summertime cooking.
Right. That looks like that might be crumbly.
I think it's about there, yeah. Got some nice lumps in there, nice lumps with the nuts, all the butter's worked through. It's important you lift up the crumble like that and get the air in it as well, because that helps to distribute it all. That makes it nice and light. Right, well, I think it's time to stick it on the top. So, I'm going to take it now and just take a handful of that and just sprinkle it along the top of the blueberries. There we go. Make sure it's all covered in crumbly mixture. And just going to top this dish up kind of to the top. This is a good point that's just been raised. If you're using a slightly more bitter fruit, gooseberries, raspberries or something, and apples as well, I find, especially if you're using baking apples, it's good to like parboil the fruit a bit first. I mean, blueberries, it's okay because they're soft and they're quite sweet, but if you're using harder fruit especially, you want to boil them a bit first. Thanks for that tip, Jackie. There we go. We've got one crumble ready to hit the oven. Floury hands. And we're going to stick this in to bake for about 25 minutes, half an hour. So while that's in there, are we going to have some music now?
All right, thanks for saying that. So we've been talking about the Suitcase Royale, and right about now we're going to have Messy Dimes from the Suitcase Royale. Here we go.
Boots and a light. just down the back line. Old show ain't got a clue when I'm going down. Get in deep, deep, deep. But all I want's a coffee so I can get some sleep. Well, 6 p.m. it's raining. Some get some sleep.
The Suitcase Royale there, and I should just say you can see the Suitcase Royale playing at least the musical part of the set at St Newington International Airport this Saturday, along with Greg McLaren, who's been on the show a couple of times. So if you're free Saturday, pop along down there. We've tweeted the link for that.
Okay, so on to our
Arts for the Tenor feature.
Regular panel feature.
We should have the jingle. We got the jingle?
Oh yeah.
Art for a tenor! Art for a tenor! Here you go, love. Here you go. Nice bit of art there for you. Here you go.
Welcome to our Arts for Under a Tenor panel discussion. This week, we've got guests Gaz, who's a returning panelist. Also Dave, the returner, I think.
Yeah.
And got a panel virgin, Julie. So I thought we'd kick off with Gaz. You're reviewing a book that you've read. Is it Hackney, This Rose Red Empire?
A confidential report.
Yeah. So it's Ian Sinclair, isn't it? Who's sort of known as a psychogeographer, but has written a kind of, he's known as a novelist, but he's written a non-fiction book about Hackney, where he's lived for 40 years.
Yeah, I started to give it a read. Having lived in Hackney for the last 3 years, I thought, okay, yeah, it makes sense. It is down my street, literally. And I enjoyed it, though. It was, I didn't know what to make of it at first, because it's a non-fiction book that seems to have a bit of a narrative running behind it. The author, Ian Sinclair, has lived in Hackney since the 60s. And it's as much as him describing how he's come to view the borough change.
Okay, so it's his own story as well, it's like a history.
As much as it is others. So he's got a whole ragtag of people that he interviews, and it sort of lightens it up, because you can only hear about his own sort of bohemian sort of 60s sort of crew for so long. But then he starts, he confronts everybody from sort of ravers to craze associates and the like.
So really reflecting that rich mix that we have in the borough of Hackney that we all love so much.
Yeah, it's certainly diverse, but it's also, it's, I think it sort of, he tries to draw parallels with how pretty much all roads lead to Hackney, it would seem. Like at one point he's gone about sort of James Mansfield, Hollywood sort of star from the golden era.
She opened a bird fancier's fair, I think, to remember.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at some point. And she had her jacket nicked and sold in the local pub.
Oh dear.
Wow. I mean, the guy, the guy's studied film, as he sort of often talks about throughout the book. And it shows, because a lot of the things seem to be film-based. And one of the better anecdotes we're going to is sort of how the craze would take reels of film of sort of Italian sort of style, stylists or whatever from the day to tailors on Kingston Road and ask them to make suits based on what's in the film, which I thought was a really nice touch. But, you know.
I thought, I've also read the book myself, having read it, I thought, I mean, you pointed out, it's a non-fiction book that doesn't read like a non-fiction book in a way. It's sort of,
yeah.
It's the writing's still quite abstract and there's sort of lots of definite strands that he's woven in there. Did you find you discovered sort of things you really wouldn't have expected?
Yes, certainly. I mean, I didn't know, for example, that Joseph Conrad lived in Hackney, having come back from the Congo. He was put up in the hospital, the German hospital in Dalston, which I've actually got friends who now live in, now that it's been redeveloped, which is kind of odd. But
I suppose that must be quite a recurring theme, because so much of the area must change dramatically in the last 40 years. I mean,
yeah, certainly.
Even look at like Haggerston Bat and things in the last few, well, in the years since we've been living here, it's completely turned around. And
yeah, I mean, he actually lives in Haggerston currently, and it's as much of a snapshot of a Hackney that no longer exists. As it is. It's like him sort of putting it into a time capsule, because it's written pre sort of Dalston getting on the tube. And sort of Shoreditch station opening, that sort of thing. So it has a lot about the Olympics and the regeneration. It's way before it's even had any sort of impact, like how the impact it has now. It's already out of date, as it were.
I thought it was quite nice as well. Did you find it fun spotting places you knew in there? Like, for example, the Napier Arms that we've had a few nights out years. Him ending up at a wake after a funeral there, and also the Four Ages, which became Labyrinth, which, you know, people who partied there over the years. I think it's great that he picked from lots of different strands.
Yeah. The Labyrinth elements to it, so probably a bit too before my time living in Hackney. But it's great how much detail he goes in about sort of Dalston and sort of Kingston Road, because that's where I ride that route every day. So.
What I thought was really great, I mean, I ended up coming out with a reading list almost.
Yeah.
Because I had absolutely no idea there were so many novels, particularly post-war novels based around Dalston, and painters as well. And I ended up coming out with I've got to look up these painters, these novelists, these are things, you know. Also, really utterly surprising, all the 60s stuff. Who knew that a member of the Bardon Meinhof gang was undercover working in the Dinky factory in Clapton for 30 years?
Yeah. She was also trained to be a drug rehab specialist, paid for by Hackney Council, which was a nice anecdote. But yeah, I think. It's a fascinating book in terms of everyone he meets within it is sort of an offshoot to more stuff, and I think it's as much an unwritten, unfinished research piece.
Yes,
he's got so many strands that he'd like to go into more detail on, I can tell, but you know, he just hasn't had the time, and there's a lot left unsaid, I guess. Everyone within it is people that he might have met sort of 10 years ago and tracked down or saw something that sort of led them to. It's a proper sort of mystery book in a way.
And I think this is one of the main problems that people come up against, is they're sort of tracing people that they'd be in contact with and sort of trying to trace that history of where they've been. So of course people move on and things. And I think you hit a lot of dead ends, and I'm sure, you know, the stories, they're sort of, they come to a point you can't go any further back in your research of that strand. You have to try and take a different avenue.
It's a real surprise, actually. Some of the strands that you think in the book, when you've been reading it, you think are never going to be resolved, finally are. Like tracking down the crazed doctor to being an alky drinking in the park in London Fields.
See, I was actually surprised that the Blairs live within Hackney.
The Blairs.
I had no idea that, yeah.
Where was that? Was this before they moved to Upper Street?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think they were his neighbours pretty much, so it was sort of Haggerston Way.
Uh-huh.
He uses it to sort of say about what's going to happen to the borough and how it's a sort of big omen of change and things, and certainly gentrification and what the Blairs went on to sort of stand
well,
for.
Well, that's it. I mean, you mentioned Haggerston and sort of people living around there, but then it's also, again, the diversity of the borough is that you've got areas like the Beauvoir town right next to it that is, you know, super, super rich, and you know, you've got it right next to Kingsham Road, which is really mixed areas.
Well, that's, I mean, it's one of the things that I don't really think it properly addresses, that even a book like this is going to be making the area seem more appealing to the prospective gentrification. So, I don't know, I think it's going to be, not on the back of this book, but it's certainly one of many sort of elements that's going to increase gentrification within Hackney and sweep away what he's written about. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Or at least, I don't know, how would you say it? It's...
Do you think that's part of his reason for writing it, though, is trying to preserve this very particular era in his own history and in the borough's history as that ties in with his own life?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a love letter for him. I mean, I've not read the London Circular book.
London Orbital.
London Orbital.
Yeah.
Though I imagine, like, sort of Peter Ackroyd or someone like that. That
psychogeographer.
Yeah, that he likes writing about London. And the Hackney book was one that has always been sort of there under the surface for him, because he's lived here since the 60s.
Yeah.
Anyone else got any questions for Gaz?
Did you find you got anything from reading the book that might influence your own work, your own sort of ideas at all? Were you inspired by anything?
As I'm saying, just things that I'll probably look up.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I was saying, actually speaking of looking up, I've mentioned this earlier, it doesn't have an index, which I think is a real crime, because I went to it straight away hoping to find my street's on the back of the cover anyway, so because there's a map of Hackney.
Yeah.
But I was hoping that I could sort of look up more detail about things straight away. And
yeah.
It sort of forced me to actually read the book, which was...
What I decided to do, guys, is read it, and then I'm going to reread it, making notes.
Yeah.
And note down things. I think it kind of it calls for that.
I think it would probably take a couple of readings, because there's so much, it's so rich in sort of content. I mean, it really is happening under a microscope.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and lots of stuff that's been completely forgotten in there. Roland Camberton, the kind of 50s novelist, and it's stuff that nobody would know about at all.
No, you can see, I mean, I've read recently that William Gibson, cyberpunk author and sort of postmodern guy, has said that Ian Sinclair's his favourite author, and I can see
yeah.
it just because they both share that eye for detail and, you know, just really, really heavily researching subjects, which I think what he's done here.
Well, speaking of which, you've got his researcher in the book as well, and you've no idea what that bit's all about.
Yeah, that's odd.
That's the old bit, you don't even know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Mm.
So, Ian Sinclair, that Rose Red Empire.
We'll be tweeting a link to that.
We'll be tweeting.
So on to our second panellist of the evening, Dave.
Hello.
Welcome. So what
Hi.
Did you go and see?
I went to see Chris Corsano last Friday.
Uh-huh.
That was at Cafe Otto. That's on Ashwin Street in Dalston.
Okay, yeah. Just off Kingsham Road.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. It's a bit awkward. Well, I went the wrong way. I thought it was south of the crossroads. It was
uh-huh.
north of the crossroads. But it's pretty straightforward if you... Google Map. It's like an improvisation. Chris Corsano's a drummer, and he was collaborating with Paul Dunmore, who was on wind instruments. He played a variety of saxophone, bagpipes, pans.
Wow.
And it was I arrived a little bit late.
Uh-huh.
But I did catch the end of the second set.
Okay.
Sorry, the
end
start
of the second
the
set.
Start of the second set. I got a good hour's worth. My phone was an hour behind, which I didn't realise.
Dave, if you didn't see a tenner's worth of show, you're not going to get a tenner's worth of ticket money.
Yeah, okay. I probably saw about £6.53's worth of show. Oh. Yeah. Okay. And yeah, it was great. I'm kind of going by the letter of your kind of usual review questions, just to kind of keep me anchored.
Yeah, that's good.
Because it was improvisation, so I was kind of all over the place, kind of in terms of how do I review something like this.
Surely the band were all over the place rather than you.
Sorry?
Surely the band were all over the place rather than you.
Yeah, they well, not necessarily. I'd had a drink beforehand, but it didn't really kind of... it didn't inhibit me in writing stuff. So, what did I think? Well, I thought it was good. It sounded fantastic. Both musicians, they seemed to really work well together, even for improvisation. It seemed almost kind of composed some parts of it.
And what's the space like? How did it work in the
space? Cafe Otto. It's a lot bigger than I expected, actually. The acoustics there are quite good. It's kind of like ground floor of some kind of warehouse space, so it's
okay.
Not. But I think they've worked with it well, and you know the sound quality was good. There were probably about like 80 people there or something, but quite comfortably. It was a good sized gig. I was expecting it to be really quite crowded and small, and the cafe bit is a bit deceiving because it's a good size. Have you been there before?
I've put my head in there before.
Yeah.
Briefly.
Okay.
But to be honest, I think it's a bit of a problem with the London improv scene at the moment. There's a lot of venues sort of closing down, and things are being crammed into much smaller venues. Like the Vortex has now moved, and it's in quite a strange... Well, it's moved from when it used to be on Church Street.
Oh, yeah.
But it's in quite a strange sort of glass-sided building now in a marketplace off Dalston. Been to see stuff in there, and it's quite distracting being that open to the street, if you see what I mean? And it's also a very small, cramped space. I don't think it works that well, really.
Yeah, I think it loses... compared to Cafe Otto, that space, Otto reminds me a lot more of how the Vortex used to be on Church Street.
Right, yeah, because that was
and
a great space for
It's kind of similar, I suppose, actually, in size as well, and kind of like rustic-y feeling.
Okay.
And, I mean, saying that, maybe... This is where there's been a faction of, and they've decided, okay, well, we're not that keen on the new space here in Vortex. Like, we'll go and do something around the corner or so. I don't know, but I've got the kind of summer lineup for other gigs at Otto, which I'll mention at the end of the show.
Yeah.
But it does seem to be, it's a lot of kind of wire. You know, the Wire magazine, a lot of familiar names and artists appearing on here. So, you know, like you're saying that's maybe dying out a bit. I mean, I think it looks like it's like a concentration of those.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're kind of going
in
this space.
Things have been pushed maybe more into like one or two venues because other there used to be the Red Rose up Finsbury Park as
was
a really nice space. They had that almost church hall out the back that they do.
I never
they used to have comedy in there as well.
They've still got a comedy club there. They're still doing improv because I cycled by.
Are they still doing comedy there?
I don't know. Yeah, they've still got a comedy sign there.
Oh, right, okay. I know they haven't done gigs there for ages, from the free jazz side of things and the improv side of things. But
I used to work in a call centre with a guy who's... like doing the organisation.
Oh, really?
Can I ask?
Yeah, because free jazz is a bit of a kind of, I don't know, Sarah I know is very familiar with it. It's something I'm not familiar with at all.
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, it's a bit of, it's sort of sometimes viewed as a bit of an inaccessible kind of art form.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot, have you been to see much before?
I think I've been to see a fair few kind of improvisation gigs, but this was kind of, this
would you say it was sort of accessible? Would you say it was the sort of thing that you might enjoy as a...
I'd say it's more accessible for musicians than kind of the general public. But I think everyone can get something out of it.
I think if you look at it as going to see a performance, I'd say it's as accessible as theatre because If you say play, if you were to play me a CD of Chris Cassano now, he's gonna miss the whole point of seeing these kind of performances live, because I mean, how the musicians are creating the sound and how they're playing with each other, and I think there's definitely a very physical element to that that you don't get from just listening to the music.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I also think that if you're, I don't know, I mean, to a certain extent, it didn't seem that different from, you know, your kind of like cliche, your typical improvisation, jazz improvisation that we're all kind of familiar with seeing that. And yeah, I mean, I think like the sound is more interesting than the actual live part, to be honest. I don't know if you're not a musician, I think people might have difficulty engaging with that bit of it, because it's essentially just one guy. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to detract from him. He's really passionate in his drumming, and it's really quite, but it's all, unless you know that, I think
he's just drumming.
I don't know, it might seem a little bit bland. I don't know. Kind of visually, anyway. But still, it's still quite dramatic, like the way they interact together.
I'm starting to smell a pie that might be approaching ready, so I'm thinking we should move on to our final panel so that we can be ready for our pie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you heard enough to say?
More or less. I'll tell you at the end of the show what else he's doing at the end of the day.
Cool.
So we'll be tweeting links to that as well.
I've just tweeted a link to Chris Cassano's MySpace, so hopefully
That's got a list of all his new gigs and a couple of good videos of his stuff, so.
Great.
So, Julie. Julie, you went to the Arcola Theatre,
in
Dalston as well? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to see Light Shining in Buckinghamshire, which was written by an English playwright called Carol Churchill in 1976. Doesn't quite fall into the bracket of Art Fund of Tenor, but if you go to the Arcola on Tuesday night, they do it pay what you can. So they say you can pay anything, but they recommend sort of payments of like £5 a ticket. So I went there.
It qualifies under that.
So Tuesday nights is the night to go. It's been quite kind of like well received by sort of the critics. So they were like, oh, we expect to sell out tonight. So I got there early, sort of sat in their eco cafe and had a beer before I went in. So that might have slightly altered my perception of it. But so it's quite a politically kind of heavy play.
Not a lot of laughs from Carol Churchill, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'd never actually heard of Carol Churchill before, and almost thought it was Winston Churchill, so it's like, actually, no, you wrote it.
Easy mistake.
It's basically set just after the end of the Civil War, so in the late 1600s, and it's sort of talking about like the political unrest that was at the time, and sort of representing like different radical extremists that were there. So you had like the diggers and the ranters. The diggers were the kind of levellers, and
sounds like something from Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, and the new model army, which were kind of like basically all these different groups were trying to recruit people to fight their causes, and they all kind of invoke this kind of creating heaven upon earth. There were lots of people at the time who believed that the second coming of Christ was going to happen. Sort of, I think they actually say at one point in sort of 1,200 days time. So there's sort of all this turbulence, and people kind of cling on to this notion of God and religion and the second coming, I guess, as a way to sort of see them through this kind of struggle. So the play is sort of basically made up of all these kind of short scenes. There's six kind of actors, and they all kind of like change a lot, change characters, and represent these different people and different opinions. So it can be sort of slightly difficult to follow at times, because you're sort of seeing the same person, and they're actually meant to be representing a different sort of view. Mm-hmm. So if you're not kind of well versed in your kind of British history, it, you know, it can get a little bit kind of
so it was confusing rather than enlightening on that, maybe.
Well, I mean, I sort of I'd done some like work which was sort of to do with art and activism, and so I kind of heard of the diggers and stuff, so I was following it on that sense. But for someone coming to it completely cold, might be a little bit kind of hard going. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone can relate to the universals of sort of like, you know, religion and propaganda, and it kind of has a lot of relevance today.
This sort of revolutionary time, people trying to be recruited for different sides.
And I think it has a lot of relevance today because we just obviously had the like financial crisis and the coalition government and stuff. So these sort of issues that it's raising, I think, like they even say on the website, sort of like newfound relevance. So yeah, it was good.
That's interesting. I think because Carol Churchill sort of, I guess, I'll admit now, having done my degree in theatre at this era, so sort of knowing the background of it, she was best known for Top Girls, which she wrote in the early 80s. It's kind of like polemic feminist theatre. She's always kind of tackled big political things. She did that play about Palestine last year at the Royal Court.
She did My Mother Said I Never Should as well. Is that her?
I believe so.
Yeah, another like hardcore feminist.
Feminist sort of thing. So she's always tackled political things, but that's one of her less known plays, and it hasn't been revived recently. So it's interesting that they've chosen to sort of dig that one out of the vaults. So did you found that it sort of resonated in some sort of way?
Yeah, I think it did. And in the second half, it's a 2-hour play, it's got a 15-minute interval. And the second half, all the kind of costume changes to like modern dress. So they have like the army sort of switch from being in their sort of more traditional costume to being in sort of like modern day sort of police outfit sort of things. So they kind of labour that point. I think that's sort of the message they're trying to get across. And yeah, I mean, the set design was kind of really nice as well. It was sort of like a recessed kind of cross in the theatre, and the chairs sort of circularly like outline the space. So there's a part in the second half where it's sort of like the Putney debates, which took place, which was this sort of like pivotal moment in sort of British history, where they had these kind of like radical extremists around the table with like Oliver Cromwell, and they, you know, there was this real moment where like all this kind of change and turbulence could have really had some kind of like monumental effects. But then it's really sad because, you know, just basically, I vote for a committee, and, you know, it all sort of like disintegrates. So I guess, it kind of leaves you with that kind of like slightly sad feeling that there's all this sort of momentum.
Idealism,
and it really doesn't come to much. And today, like, we find ourselves, still in, like, you know, like a capitalist consumerist society.
It echoes, I guess, movements and, you know, things that also tap into that idealism, and I guess sort of, you know, various political and faith movements that have kind of, you know, had those ideas, things that have sort of not ultimately come off.
Yeah.
It sounds like it could have been quite a whole game. Was it still entertaining? Was it sort of, did you enjoy watching it?
I did enjoy watching it, but I found that, like, having gone away and thought about it a lot afterwards, I've got more out of it.
Right.
Like, if you sort of wanted to go for some light-hearted piece of theatre, then no. But on the same note, I'd probably recommend buying the programme because they have like a little bit of context in there, so it's an extra pound or something. So that kind of helps you along your way. But for the completely unpolitically interested people out there, then
And artistically, it's not, Carol Churchill tends to be quite, in her writing, a little bit abstract, like you said, they kind of went from historical dress to modern dress and that sort of thing. You know, what was there anything you sort of noticed about how they made it, anything sort of artistically about it that stood out for you?
I think that probably comes back down to the kind of set design, probably, maybe with cross, and, you know, like, it kind of makes the audience really feel part of certain parts of it. So where you have the kind of debate that was going on, I was just talking about, like, the committee meeting, and you sort of feel like you're like an observer in Parliament, and they kind of, they bring in the modern dress, I suppose,
It sounds a bit Brecht, for those who might have studied Brecht, but it sounds like, would you recommend it?
Yes, I would recommend it, but yeah, like I say, just buy the programme.
So you definitely need the background research?
Yeah, I think so, because where it is quite sort of fast-paced and you have all these changes and scenes that, you know, it's confusing probably for someone who is more well-versed in it as well, so.
Have you taken anything away from it that you think you're kind of, you know, you're keep in mind for, you know, any future artistic endeavours or intellectual endeavours?
Yeah, I mean, it feeds into some of the stuff that I've been doing in sort of like art and design projects, and I've just kind of curated a workshop for Arts Admin, which is all about like art activism and climate change. So it kind of like feeds into interests I have, and it'll probably like indirectly affect maybe things I do in the future. So yeah, it's almost like I've had a good history lesson or something, and yeah, a bit of extra context.
Having mentioned Arts Admin, I'm going to tweet the link to Arts Admin because they're a great organisation. They've got some really fantastic events.
Yeah.
You should definitely pick them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll be tweeting the links for all the shows and books, etc., mentioned in the panel feature. I can smell something ready to come out of the oven.
It smells delicious.
I'm going to go over to the oven and get the pie out.
Are we going to burn our mouths?
No.
It's going to make good radio anyway. The noise.
We've also got some creme fraiche that you can dollop on to cool it down a bit.
Okay,
so
well,
I'll
tell
fridge.
You what.
Are
we bringing the microphone with us, or are we?
Should I bring it over, or what?
Yeah,
what do you think is the best way?
Should play the tune while you bring it over?
Have we got another tune?
I just wanted to interject. Sorry, to interject.
Adam.
Paul had an excellent cooking tip for me the other day. Concerning this very point in the cooking, we're maybe just a little bit late, but he was saying, and obviously this is Paul, so it makes sense, he was saying, he turns the oven off 5 minutes before time, because you get all of the cooking heat, but over the year, he said, he reckons he saved hundreds of pounds on the food bill.
That is a great environmentally friendly tip. Do love saving the environment on Darren and our backwards.
We do,
so,
indeed.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so should we keep the mic here? You bring the feed over.
Yeah, I'll bring the dishes as well, okay?
Let's bring in, we've got another track here from the Suitcase Royale, Fantastic Geek. See them at STK this weekend. This is If Only I Could Fall in Love, I believe.
Repetition is the least of my worries, as her eyes fade from me and focus on the doorway. Looks as though she's in a hurry. She looks as though she's never heard these words before. And it's over before it even started. This confidence that suddenly swelled up. Tell you now, my lips, they are so easy to read. And I'll say it again. If only I could fall in love with you. I'll say it again. Well, if only I could fall in love with you. And I know you got a friend who's in the army. Yeah, you'll get married. Sorry for myself now that I've made my intentions clear. But I'll say it again. If only I could fall in love with you. I'll say it again. If only I could fall in love with you. Yeah, well, you know exactly what I do. fall in love with
back in.
And here we have a delicious looking blueberry crumble. So,
wow.
Turned out all right.
Should we take a photo and post it on the website?
We could take a photo and post it on
Twitter. And then people can post their ones back.
If anyone's got a camera handy.
Yeah, be very excited.
Phone camera, come on, everyone's got bloody phone camera these
days.
Come on, Jackie.
We need arty food shot.
Yeah.
To be honest, it doesn't look great from here.
It's the setting, isn't it?
Well, you hold it up in a sexual pose.
I'm not sure about.
Yeah. This is good.
See the juices. Right.
Yeah, perfect.
You put in a drizzle of vodka over the top.
Oh, the vodka went in. That was a secret ingredient. Oops, wasn't supposed to say that.
Oh no, you've given it away.
I've got a cycle.
Here we go then. Who's going first? Who wants to be the guinea pig? They're all rattled.
I'll serve it up.
Chris. Ellen.
Okay, thank you. You might need to give me some kind of
pie thrust upon you. You can have a spoon and you can have some creme fraiche as well because it's hot out the oven.
I know, I might forego the creme fraiche.
Yeah.
I like it in food, but I'm not dead keen on it.
Okay. I went for creme fraiche because
it's like
the healthy option. I would normally prefer maybe like nice thick whipped cream or something, but I've been put on a diet. So that's off the menu. And that's the cheeky comments, thank you. Here we go.
Thank you.
There you go, Julie. So, I want to hear you all enjoying your pie. Lots of lip smacking, as we've been through already. In the rehearsal, remember? So, also, when you're making the crumble...
Pie wasn't like that in rehearsal.
No, it was different. This one's better.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
This is a live wire pie. There you go.
Thank you.
Just another thing to bear in mind when you make a crumble, you can add anything you fancy into the crumble. Like you can put some spices in there if you like nutmeg or cinnamon or anything like that. Just sprinkle it in. Just experiment.
Or instead
of doing the kitchen, just improvise. There we go.
Like we do on the radio, eh?
Yeah, it's all about the blag. In FM. This is black pie.
Would that be known?
Right, anyone else? Jackie,
yeah.
Paul, and Gaz.
Who is that one?
I think that's yours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Paul?
Oh, I've got two spoons.
This is a disaster.
The tie's not a disaster.
No.
Maybe
no,
actually
no.
Serving of it is not,
no, not
as
cool,
slick
though.
As it could have been.
Hide very good.
Yeah.
Hide very good.
Also, you can adapt this recipe at any time of the year, whatever you've got. If you want to make pumpkin pie, pumpkin crumble, it's another firm favourite around here. Come sort of October time when pumpkins are in season.
But it's not too sweet, which is good.
Yeah, you get that tanniness like mixed with the sugar.
Dave, you had a couple of mouthfuls. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, it's great pie. Yeah, it tastes like kind of fruit and
fruit and flour and butter.
Yeah, and
this is
like
fresh. A MasterChef style analysis. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
We've got the blueberries. We've got the crumble. We've got the sugar.
There's.
And expanding waistlines.
And it's not as hot as I expected, which is good.
You can really taste the wholemeal flour in it, actually.
Yeah. See, I was trying to do a bit of a healthy option here.
How much of a diet are you on?
Huh?
Man, there's nothing there.
Yeah, Chef is only eating about 2 bites of her own pie, by the way, everyone.
That's because I know all the ratios of arsenic.
She's a feeder.
She just saved it all for you lot, just being generous.
So, in the spirit of Lammas, I'm feeding my guests and friends and family. And,
And the gods too. You should offer
Adam,
so
our producer,
too.
What do you think about pie?
Mm, right, thank you. Mm. Oh, there's a crunch in there.
That is good pie.
Well, it's good pie.
It's good pie. So
I didn't know you could make pie so quickly.
This is about why I chose to do the crumble.
But a comedian in the room.
It's really like it's a school night pie if you do the crumble.
That's a good one, yeah.
You don't need to
good.
Be making the pastry.
I need some pie comedy.
Chris is a recently qualified comedian.
Oh.
Where
do you get that certificate?
If
you can tell.
In semi retirement.
Chris took the Muse Moose Absolute Beginner Stand Up.
Yeah, it was No Love and Mouth, in actual fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when I was on stage.
It's a good cause though.
It was a good cause, yeah. I couldn't spend £5 in any better way that not on drugs or sex.
But it might be
it lasted longer too.
It does give a bit of an insight into how it all works.
Yeah. They take the money and tell you you're funny.
You need to get out and gig a bit more.
I do. I need to get out a bit more in general.
How do I set myself up as one of these teachers?
I don't know. Basically, get Ellen to tell people to pay you money. And I forget how it works. I think she gets 10%.
This is not true at all.
But yeah, it was good stuff. It's nice to know that other people are really unfunny and think they're funny too. It makes you feel better about trying to be funny. Because some people really, really think they're funny and they're really not. Do you mean?
But you had a good first night. You'd had a good graduation
night,
gig.
Yeah.
We came along and did that with you.
I did pay loads of people come laughing.
Where was it held?
At the Amuse Moose Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
In Covent Gardens, yeah.
They run three clubs.
Mm. Yeah, down under bar. And then I did a really bad gig at the Laughing Horse in Earl's Court. And then put me off a little bit. But then I did another good gig in Covent Gardens again. In the Belushi's.
Mm.
Which is a tiny little venue.
Yep.
There's actually more people here than there were there. But, you know, good because, like, you know, you can actually.
That's always the way. If there's no one there, your gig will go
well. Well, I thought, in fact, there were so few people there that they were kind of obliged to laugh because I could see all of them.
Yeah.
And I was looking a bit like, you know, a bit like a bouncer at the time. So, just polite laughter.
You can rough them up.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're
so
going to come and join me in Edinburgh this year.
I don't know, to be honest. I think I'm not ready to gig
in
Edinburgh.
There's too many gigs going on in
Yeah, room. I'm not ready to gig. I wouldn't mind going up.
Not to do the old 10-minute slot in a couple of free fringe shows.
Yeah. I don't think I'd I found that you'd have to be honest. I've not been in the frame of mind to do this at the minute.
I think you should come up and see what it's all about.
Yeah, I'd like to come up and see what it's all about if I'm still welcome.
You're more than welcome.
Okay.
I will be in Edinburgh for the entire month of August.
With the people that you had on the show last time who were hilarious. Was that last time or the time before?
It was last time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Among others, yeah, with Yannia, just Lee, the Grandees and Tara Finn. So
we've got the Edinburgh Festival going on next month.
That
all
is
month,
another festival.
Where's that?
It's the whole of August.
Are you doing a radio
there
show?
Technically, there are several Edinburgh festivals. There's the Edinburgh International Festival, the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, which is what I work as part of. There's also the Edinburgh Jazz and Blues Festival and the Edinburgh Literary Festival, all going on at once.
Wow.
Oh, and the Edinburgh Military Tattoo. That attracts the American tourists.
So we hope you've got somewhere to stay up there. Because it's good
day first. I think probably the military tattoo.
Yeah,
it means we get fireworks every night at the castle at 9 o'clock. That's normally how I know it's time to start working.
Other end of the country, starting this weekend, in fact just going on over the weekend, if you wanted to do something Lammas Lunasa oriented, there's Lammas Fest, which is in Eastbourne this weekend. Featuring folk music, locally sourced produce, local ales, all that kind of thing down by the sea. There's also the International Gypsy Guitar Festival going on in Gossington in Gloucestershire, which again is a lot of gypsy guitar music, with also a big focus on people bringing their own instruments, whether it's fiddle, flute, guitar, whatever, and there's really a jam sort of atmosphere there where anyone can get involved, and you're as likely to see sort of impromptu music happening like around campfires at night as you are on the actual set stages. They're also featuring the sort of locally sourced food and locally brewed ales. We'll be tweeting the link to that.
We've tweeted all those links? Googled and tweeted simultaneously.
Later on in the month,
multiple.
We've got the Moor Music Festival, which I went to 2 years ago.
It's a really sort of, it's called, they say it's like a mini Glastonbury for the north, and it's up on Ilkley Moor. So you are somewhat, not much but mud up there, no matter what time of year it is. You do need to take your wellies if you're going to this one.
Who's headlining?
It's a lot of local bands, actually. A lot of up-and-coming
local
talent. Again, it's more off the beaten track. There's some friends of mine that run the Gonzo sound system in Leeds. They will have a stage set up there, playing like local sort of dance acts on the sort of dubstep, sort of drum, bassy side of things, electro, as well as a lot of folk bands. It was featured last year in Enemy's Top 30 Festivals and The Guardian's Top 10 Indie Festivals. It's a really nice kind of small festival, like it's grown up from like a grassroots thing over the last 5 years, to become like quite holding its own
is
on the festival
camping?
Surface. Yes, there is camping on Ilkley Moor. Mm. Yeah.
Is a hat required?
A hat? A flat cap, probably, yeah.
From the famous song on Ilkley Moor Bar Tap.
Are you going to sing it for us?
No.
we could tweet a link to that, maybe.
On Ilkley Moor Bar Tap.
Yeah. And that's from the 12th to the 15th of August, which is sort of like the middle of the month and the other end of Lammas. All of these are more available on festivalcalendar.co.uk. Tweeting that as well.
It is the top link in Google if you Google Ilkley Moor, is Ilkley Moor Bar Tap.
There you go, heard it here first.
You can actually ask for more.
So, you know, between us all, we're going to be checking out some festivals. We have our special guest here tonight, Dan.
Hello.
So Dan's going to tell us what he's up to festival-wise this season.
Yeah, I've been quite fortunate this season. I mean, I've put the most I've ever gone to in my life, to be honest. I've been to quite a few already. Uh-huh. I've just got back from Reading on Monday. From quite a homegrown festival called Truck.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's only been going like for 13 years.
Whereabouts is that?
It's in a little town called Didcot near Oxford.
Okay, yeah.
And it's very sort of still small. And it's just sort of nice, just you can take your own sort of drink into the actual site. And it's just very nice, friendly, like the vicar does the ice cream stall and stuff. And it's always very nice little festival. And it's steadily growing, and it's always rated quite highly amongst the media. But me and a group of friends have been going there every year for the past few years, because our friend lives about 5 minutes walk away, so.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've also been to Love Box, which is a local one to me.
Okay.
It's like 5 minutes walk away, Victoria
just
Park.
Just holding on there. So what kind of music do you get at Truck Fest? What's the current vibe?
It's a lot of sort of very, very new bands. Like, I've only personally heard about sort of five of the artists on the lineup. But they're quite sort of new, quite eccentric bands, which doesn't really suit kind of the whole vicar as the ice cream man and stuff. But it just works. They have their old like teenage fan club headlining.
Okay.
Headlining this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah, which I'd not heard of them much before, but I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And, Mew
Sparky's
headline.
Dream.
Yeah.
Takes me back.
and Mew headlined as well, which I loved. It's like a big old favourite of mine. It's
yeah.
really good. And they've got like a barn as a stage, which absolutely stunk, but it was good.
I bet by the end of the weekend.
Well, at the start of the weekend, it was still terrible. But
that's good.
Yeah, but it's just a really nice festival, and a group of us have been going every year for the past like 5 years, so yeah. So sort of
cool.
A tradition now to
So you see, this is one of the reasons I asked you on the show, because I know you're quite a festival aficionado.
Yeah, I quite like going to go. I'd sort of sacrifice a whole bit of my shit just to go to festivals, really.
Uh-huh.
You spend about the same amount of money, but yeah.
And you're saying Love Box as well?
Yes, I didn't initially want to go to that, but my brother and his girlfriend wanted to go. And I first looked at the lineup and thought, that's not great on that day. It was the Sunday.
Who is it?
The one that I really, really surprised me and I really, really liked was Chromeo.
Okay.
That was like the whole tone of the day was quite sort of like dancey and sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but it's just Chromeo are amazing. It's really good. And
Hercules. Sorry, what are they?
They're sort of gay disco indie. I'd probably describe them as. Well. I quite enjoyed that. It was good. And like just literally everyone in the whole crowd was dancing. Like I went to go and get a drink, and even people in the queue were dancing. It was that kind of like sort of.
Are they in the charts then?
They've got like I think they've had a song in an advert recently.
Oh, okay.
But I Not really heard of them before that. The first time I heard of them was at that festival. They were really
sounds
really
like
good.
It gets the crowd going.
Yeah, it was good.
Festival.
It literally couldn't help but
yeah.
dance. It was like sort of funky beats kind of to it.
That's
really
it.
Cool.
It's all about the vibe, isn't it, with festivals?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, like the whole day was kind of like
get
sort
everyone
of,
going. You
yeah.
know, whatever it is, you can pull it off at a festival.
Yeah.
And you will find at a festival you'll end up having the time of your life dancing your head. Dancing
yeah.
your feet off to something that you would never imagine yourself
exactly,
being
it.
Into, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Another new band, which my brother's been gathering against me for ages for, to like, Hercules and the Love Affair.
Uh-huh.
They played this year and they kind of like set the whole vibe of the day because it was just like really, really cool sort of dancey beats. I really enjoyed that day.
Beats, sunshine.
Yeah, the weather is perfect for it as well, which I think makes any festival really the weather.
Yeah.
It's like the,
that's a big part of it, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Any others that you're looking forward to?
Yes, this weekend, Field Day, which
field
is
day.
Another, it's Victoria
that's
Park
quite
again.
Local, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a 5-minute walk up the road, so that's not as nice festival. And Phoenix are playing, which I'm really excited about seeing. And The Fall as well.
Fall, okay.
Yeah.
Are they headlining?
And no, they're not surprisingly, but they're
okay.
not really sort of the headliners anymore, are they? Because I think people have kind of forgot about The Fall.
Well, that's, it's kind of hard to keep
yeah.
up who The Fall are. I mean, it's Marky Smith, but
yeah.
I mean, who are the rest of them?
Yeah. I can't actually remember, but I think I have the website up here. We've got a link coming through.
The guy I was talking about earlier, Chris Cassano, he's playing at Field Day as
is
well.
Is
well.
Oh.
Yeah, so
oh, maybe
I'll
check that
out. Yeah, go along. Yeah.
Actually, did you catch a guy at Trekfest called Thomas Truax?
No, I didn't,
no,
but that name rings a bell.
It's a shame. He's doing the festival circuit this year. We saw him actually at the Slaughtered Lamb about a year and a half ago.
Oh, yeah. He's all
yeah.
the... bike drum machine.
Yeah, he's
yeah.
someone
oh,
to look out for as
yeah,
well. He invents all his own instruments from like found objects and things.
Mm.
Like he's got
a weird like a bicycle spoke where this bicycle wheel where all the spokes come out and I think it's set up some kind of weird thing that goes round, but obviously as he pulls the spokes out he sets different like drum beats for the songs. So doing he does his now he uses a loop box as well. But he's basically like I said he's a human drum well I say human, he's a cycle drum machine. Which I've never even thought of doing, and obviously it must take a long time to work out how to do it.
It's really worth looking at.
I have
for.
To say, their website very tricky to use in terms of working out what the lineup is.
Can I also point
they're
out that bloke with bike is a nutty fruitcake. He's an
yeah.
absolute fruit job. He sings on tables about hell and
yeah.
which
in
sounds
fact,
odd, but actually is quite
the
impressive.
The gig we saw him at, you had to sort of watch out because he was jumping on the bar and then
yeah.
he'd just jump into the crowd. And if you're in the way,
yeah.
you'd get like hit over the head with a horn or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah that's Thomas Truax, another one to look out for on the festival circuit this year. So did you have a thought about any kind of good festival tracks? Did you
put
together a bit of a playlist
yes,
that we're
I
not going to play because we don't play music? Like that, we're not allowed to play
it's
PRS music on the show. But
it's all ones that are stuck in my head from the last few weeks, really. They're sort of and what I'm looking forward to as well. I also put a few songs on there which are my dream festival kind of things. Like I always wanted to see sort of radio.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to like festival this year, which I'm quite excited about.
Okay, yeah.
Seeing her Flame and Lips, they've always
oh,
been
you
like
did get
sort
around.
Of, yeah, that's one that I've been looking forward to like for the last like 5-6 years, is seeing Flame and Lips live. Because they've been to put on quite a good show as well, like the whole going around in a bubble above
yeah,
the audience
wow.
and stuff. That's
yeah, no, they do some quite interesting stuff actually production-wise. Like they did that album that was meant to be listened to on 4 stereos.
Yes,
yeah,
so I still
want to
hear
so
this. But yeah.
It'll be quite interesting to see how that translates into a live show.
Yeah, that could be
yeah.
brilliant too.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Should we think what else? Another one that sort of wanted to mention, I got to see, like it's like a teenage kind of like wish, but I went to the Rage gig this year.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and like, Chris was there as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. It was
like
quite like
a
sort
of free thing that
is.
Is
it
yeah,
in
yeah,
Infinity
yeah.
Park?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've not really listened to Rage in like a few years, but just like as a kid, you're like this solid
uh-huh.
weed kind of thing in it. Yeah, it was quite like good to see them live because it's all been one of those sort of like things
yeah.
the buff. But yeah, it was awesome. It was good as I expected to see Rage was.
Yeah. Did you not think at certain points in that gig I actually believed the revolution was happening? Yeah, I really did think this was all a scam to get us all there, get all the
yeah.
police there. So that the whole thing happened to Gaza just before that, and I thought, you know, this is really. Do you know what I mean? This is it.
It's
this
funny
is it.
You say that because
yeah.
actually that night after the gig
too,
I was at
but...
a party and they played Killing in the Name
yeah.
of and the whole building just went crazy
yeah.
basically and it really felt you know like something.
It's about to start a revolution.
It was a good
but
moment.
I realised I'd work the next day.
Yeah.
And Simon Cowell was still winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
anyway, thanks for that, Dan. And yeah, enjoy your festival season. So I have the guest tonight, Chris. Hello again. You've been, is this something we talk about quite a lot, your kind of fancy festival lineup, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, basically,
we've got two ideas, well, two theories. One is a fantasy festival that is actually plausible, possible, and might happen. But going into it, it will kind of show off my sad indie roots, kind of my age too. Yeah, because a lot of the bands, some people listening will probably never heard of. And if they did, it'd probably be because their dad plays it. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to be some people's dad, so let's move on with it. I'm thinking of Glastonbury, because Glastonbury is the way you get the big pop acts. And ideally, there's certain people, I don't think I've ever played Glastonbury. One headline on the Friday, I'd like to have Madonna. Yeah, because I think Madonna, it's about time Madonna played the festival. And I'd really like to see Madonna, but I don't actually want to pay for it. Yeah, so to see it at Glastonbury is like, I can see it if she's rubbish. I can see her do a couple of tracks and then kind of go, I've seen Madonna, and then go see something. Tick it off my list. Then I thought, you know, for old times, I like Pulp, because I'm a bit of an indie kid.
Uh-huh.
They're on my list.
And they are amazing.
They were my first gig ever, actually.
They're amazing.
Oh, wow.
Festival band.
I've got real love for Pulp, yeah.
Yeah, seeing them, you know, with 60,000 people, it's always a moment, you know. Obviously, I'd like to see the only ones at Glastonbury, although I know they're never going to play there.
They're on my list too.
Yeah, they're amazing. Like, yeah. I've got some many stories about the only ones. But because actually, they come back. I was at the two comeback gigs.
Oh, wow.
They did a secret comeback gig in a little pub in, I can't remember where it was, somewhere South London, where they didn't announce it. I knew they was going to come back, but they basically just turned up after their son's gig. Like, they was in the crowd, and suddenly everybody was going home, and they quickly just set, you know, changed things over and just played four songs just about 3 weeks before their big comeback gig. At the Minehead Festival.
That was the
London gig, but the actual first gig, the first real gig in 32 years was at the All Tomorrow's Parties in Brixton, where I was actually invited, and they actually one of the songs that wasn't in the set list, when I talked to them the week before, I asked them about it, they said, we haven't been rehearsing that, and when I went to see them, they actually played it for me.
What song was that?
That was Program.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Program
Brilliant
is one of my favourite tunes.
Yeah.
And that's like a real memory, because I go staying with them afterwards, making a bit of a fool of myself, falling down their stairs, falling in a river, and having to be helped by Peter Perrett's wife for the shower, and then being escorted across the festival in my boxer shorts to go get some new clothes.
There you go, kids, don't meet your idols.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the funny thing, is I actually spent 2 hours talking to my idol, well, for like 20 years, and it's one of the biggest moments of my life, and I can't remember a single word I said to him. But I know it happened because there's pictures.
Having known Chris for about 15 years, I can attest to him being the biggest Only Ones fan out there.
Yeah. But moving on from my favourite band to like a collection, like a super group of people that I'd like to see that I think would be a good gig for kind of political reasons, you know. I'd like to see a gig with Noel Gallagher mixed in with Graham Coxon. I think it'd be a good blur, you know, it's the two kings of indie playing together, and to show Damon Albarn some humility, I give him the responsibility of he can play the triangle or the tambourine, his choice, but he can't sing or prance around. Yeah.
Yes, man.
Love it.
I think and there'll be no gorillas at all on the whole festival. If anything, they could play a little, like, they could play a pub band outside, for the rest of the gorillas, because I think they need to earn some money. okay, moving on to Saturday. Saturday, I should put Johnny Cash on there, but I should have put him on the dead list because he's dead.
Doesn't matter. This is a fantasy festival.
Well, no,
you can have whoever. You've just had a band with bloody Damon Albarn.
I know.
I've got a dead list coming up.
But this is the Saturday. I was thinking Johnny Cash, Dire Straits for, you know, because you always grab an old band, and I'd really like to see some Dire Straits songs played live. Do you mean? Only about three of them.
Which three?
Romeo and Juliet, Money for Nothing, and Brothers in Arms. And that'll be it. And then you can fuck off, to be honest. excuse my language.
Oops, have you got a bleep?
We're allowed.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Then,
so many words.
Again, it's festival week, Saturday night, people are going to be pretty on it. So again, we're going to need some rage. Yeah, rage is always good in festival. Followed by something calming, I think Prince. So I think it's about time Prince played Glastonbury.
Yeah, why not?
And,
Do you know what would be awesome? A Madonna Prince link up. If Madonna was still hanging around in their wellies from the Friday night,
I don't know if you would want to look it on YouTube, but Prince recently played at Coachella Festival. He played Creep by Radiohead. which Prince is very, I don't know if people know, Prince is very high up on not having anything of his, doesn't like cameras or anything, any photos taken in his gigs, doesn't like any footage of his on YouTube, you can't find any videos. But, and so he took down any of his Radiohead stuff, or creep stuff. Radiohead come along and said, it's our song, if people want to hear it, put it back on YouTube, we've got the rights to it. So one of the few things you can actually get Prince on YouTube of is him playing Radiohead.
Is it good though?
Oh, it's amazing. It's
really
amazing.
Nice for the...
Yeah, it's a little bit slow at the start, but when he gets into it and his guitar at the end is like, he just kind of like, you know, certain bands kind of do covers and you think, I bet the person who wrote that wish they thought doing it like that.
Or like Hendrix playing Sergeant Pepper.
Or have you heard of Dred Zeppelin?
Yeah.
Dred Zeppelin doing Stairway to Heaven. Yeah, with the Elvis style sing with the reggae music in the background. Now, I've even heard, what's his name from Zeppelin.
Robert Plant.
Yeah, saying of all the tribute bands around, there's one that I actually really like, and that's, you know, respect him for saying that. But I've chatted too long about Prince. Moving on to Sunday, you've always got the old acts on Sunday, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Like Grasserie. So I'm thinking Tom Jones, even though he's played before, I wasn't there, so you can do it one more time before.
His new album's just gone in at number one this
really
week.
It's really good. I've only heard a couple of tracks of it. It's actually really good.
He was playing last week.
Okay.
And is he doing new material?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's written a kind of, gone back to his kind of gospel-y album.
But
wow.
It's very bluesy. It's kind of
gospel-y.
Bluesy gospel. He's what he's singing about. But he's got like a really, you know, good blues band. It's a little, almost like a, kind of like C16 kind of, you know, kind of old blues. But obviously with Tom Jones singing, which is blinding.
Sounds great.
Followed by the Kinks, because, well, we all need to see the Kinks live, and it's never going to happen. So, Kinks, and then obviously the Sunday night is the band I think everybody's been waiting for, Glastonbury, or everybody over a certain age, the Rolling Stones. Yeah, they're another band that I'd like to see before, that if they die or I die, and it's probably going to be them first, but I'd like to see them just, well, because I don't want to pay 80 quid for them, yeah? Because they're probably going to be crap. But to see them in festival is all good. Okay, moving on to my fantasy ones, or people who are dead. or some people that are dead, but single people who are alive, that I think would be good collaborations. I'd like on a Friday. I'd like to hear Muse with Freddie Mercury.
Muse is still alive.
I know Muse is still alive, but Freddie Mercury's not. And Muse are kind of like the '90s version of Queen in many respects. So I think Freddie Mercury, Brian May, collaborating with Muse. Oh yeah, it'd be a spectacle.
Because yeah. Okay.
You can imagine all the Muse's lights and it. You know,
wow. Yeah. Real on Elton John on the piano as well.
No, we're not going to. Elton John's not going anywhere near this festival. Yeah, he can have his own festival. In Vegas. Okay, a little bit of a weird collaboration, but I think it's the two things of different genres. I think Janis Joplin with Beth Ditto. Yeah? No, I think that's a dream. That'd
I had
be...
Janis Joplin on my list as well, but I don't know,
yeah.
Jimi Hendrix actually.
Well, I thought about having Hendrix with Hendrix with Kurt Cobain and Slash and Lenny Kravitz. And I think, as guitar bands go, that would be... I don't really like Lenny Kravitz's scene, but he's a fine... As a guitarist, he's a fine guitar player.
Team them out with Rage as well and get some weird guitar effects
yeah,
just to make it, you know...
Yeah, because Rage... I forgot the... What's the guitar player from Rage's name? He's... He's the lead singer. The guitar player, always wears a red cap. He's been doing some stuff with Slash recently, just little pub gigs. Just going there unannounced type thing and doing like these really weird little pub gigs.
Must be short of
cash. Yeah, probably. Saturday night, I didn't say Friday night, after Janis Joplin and Becca Ditto, I think we need 70s style white suited Elvis. Yeah.
Uh-huh. He was headlining mine.
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy, what happened?
Tom Morello.
But yeah, if you're going to have like the fantasy list of all people in history, you've got to have Elvis on a Friday, Beatles on a Saturday, Led Zeppelin on a Sunday, and then basically you can tick off all the bands your parents saw, we never did. Going on to Sunday, obviously the headline by Led Zeppelin, a bit of Chicago, Bob Marley.
Chicago?
Yeah, I like Chicago. Not the musical, I'm an old fan of Chicago. But not late Chicago, early
I'm
like...
I'm a bit lost from... Hang on.
Yeah.
Can someone sing me a Chicago song?
What is Chicago?
I'm a man, yes I am, and I can.
Yeah,
that's Dave Spencer.
No, they know they color covered it. They wrote it in like 96.
That's Chicago. I love that song.
Yeah, it's wicked, man. Like if you ever listen to that song, yeah, that's what the project nicked. You know,
my bitch up.
No, you know, come my blame again. No. Come blame again. Breathe. Yeah,
Breathe.
Yeah, that song, if you listen to that and then listen to I'm a Man, it's the drum beat, it's even got wow, 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 wow in it. Yeah?
What? Inside it or in it?
No, in it, mate. Yeah. No, inside the tune is basically they've ripped off. They've taken the blind sample of it and then sung it, you know, prodigy did it.
Man, Liam Howlett has got a far more sedate music taste than I think of him for.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. All these monsters, they all come from somewhere. Because at the end of the day, there are only so many notes, and there are only so many rhythms, and so many beats. So it's all about just finding stuff that. And that's, if you're going to write a record, then you're going to write something that you know people like, and people might not know it now, but if people liked it years ago, they're going to still like it.
Oh, well, like Oasis and the Beatles.
Yeah.
People still like Oasis.
I think people still like Oasis.
Definitely masters of riff recycling. I think.
Well, that's what you do, isn't it? You know. Yeah. Even the Beatles nick stuff.
Exactly. The riffs get recycled and passed through and sort of passed on from musician to musician. And,
well, think about everything. Doesn't everything get passed on from years by? I mean, people still read the Bible, but wasn't that just, you know, passed on from people to people to people to people to people?
So, did we have a headliner for Sunday?
Well, my headliner for Sunday was going to be Led Zepp.
I thought you were going in reverse order.
I was. I got distracted by the order we're going into. So like that's Sunday's just old school cheese, Bob Marley, Chicago, and Led Zepp with headlining not the main stage, but one of the other smaller tents. Well, there's an old band, people might not see them in the 90s, you might have read about them, called Rock Bitch.
I saw them at the Birkin in Derby.
We could have them play like the
lesbians with the gaffer tape on their tits.
Not when I saw them. They had no gaffer tape on their tits, and they had some other bits hanging out. Yeah, and they used the vibrator on stage. Now they're going to be in their 40s now, but I'd like it's fancy to still start. I'd like them back in their 20s.
Did they play in your school? They played a few schools.
In schools and stuff. But when they played the standard in Walthamstow, they had nothing on top, and I actually was sort of asleep on the stage before they come on. And then I had a bird's eye view of the whole gig. It was amazing.
They didn't play that micro on the screen, yeah. I'll tell you that.
But I thought we could have them play like one of the, you know, the little band tents or the alternative tents. But I thought it'd be better if we just had them play my tent. My festival.
They're described on Wikipedia as an expat British, mostly female Celtic punk metal goth band best known for performing nude and incorporating sexual acts and pagan ritual into their performances.
In actual fact, I'd have them play every stage
in London
night.
Primary school.
They did have them play in primary school, not primary school, secondary schools around my way.
Okay.
It's cheap say, down where me and Chris grew up.
Well, thanks a lot.
That's right.
Chris, that is a very enlightening.
Yeah, nobody can ever ask for any of my CDs again, are they?
Well, I know. I'm going to check out Chicago.
Where would your festival be?
Where my festival be?
Yeah.
I was thinking in my
back garden.
In my estate, in my castle. Yeah, where's my fantasy? So
failing that, we'll have it in Lloyd Park in Walthamstow.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Hackney Marshes, man. That's where I had my first beer in Hackney Marshes, by behind the football ground, and being chased off by the park keeper. So it'd be good.
Last week.
Yeah. So it'd be a good little turnaround to have that back and to let him complain about the noise.
Shall I introduce? We've got another music track. We've got one more from Suitcase Royale.
Yeah.
It's called The Great Belief. Are we ready there, Adam?
Yeah,
we're doing that afterwards. We're doing the sum up afterwards.
So I can't nothing.
Thank you. Apologies in a kind of John Peel style, that was not the Great Belief, that was a theme from Ballad About Joan, which is an instrumental, so it wasn't quite what we were aiming at,
but we're sort of winding down.
Winding
the
down,
end of
exactly, as we are now.
After the roller coaster ride we've had tonight.
Indeed.
You mean you've had ups and downs?
So it comes to the traditional part of our show where we plug things we're looking forward to, I guess. I guess I've already mentioned the Edinburgh Fringe. Anyone who can get up there definitely should. We should also mention this weekend, Hackney Wicked Art Festival, 30th of July to 1st of August. There'll be all sorts of things going on, galleries and music and live art and flea markets and film screenings. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be in Hackney Wick. We'll tweet you the link for that.
As well, just checking out festivals over the next month.
I believe there's a free one in London Fields soon. I'm not sure of the date, but I think there's a free arts festival in London Fields soon. I'm sure if you just search.
It's 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So
do you know what's called?
Be the weekend.
I think it's just called
the
London Fields Festival.
The 7th of August,
maybe? I've got a friend having a birthday there, actually, so I'm
not
sure if
do you want to post a link to that?
Well,
in the Facebook Republican Army.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Myra Stewart. My baby, her twin sister.
That's a lie. That's the blatant truth.
And anybody else in the room who's got something? Where's Jackie? Jackie has something she wanted to plug and she disappeared at the
Jackie
teammate.
Had a party in a skate park that was going on, but she doesn't have a location for it at the moment. She had a website, I think, that we can place a link to.
We can do that.
It's
okay.
In aid of a record label launch.
Okay.
I've forgotten the name temporarily. Again, we can post a link to that.
Yeah, we'll do that once you get back into them. Anybody else who's about, who's got anything they want to plug arts-wise?
Is that tumbleweed in the studio?
They're not creative people.
Everyone's so busy, they haven't got time to think what they're
really
actually...
Is. That's
that's
true,
it.
Yeah, there's so much going on.
But we can plug Beantown Fair, which I know lots of people we know
are
going
to.
Yeah,
in fact, I had that on my list. We'll put a link up to that as well. That's a really mixed media festival, isn't it? There's a lot of arts, installation stuff going on there. Quite a lot of local people involved in that as well, I think.
The 13th and 15th of August, we'll tweet that. Anything you've got coming up over the... we've just done that, haven't we?
26th, there's a big thing coming up, I heard, of August.
What's that?
30th of August, that might be Paul's birthday.
Fish eyes.
Captain Fish Eyes.
And I suppose we should also take this opportunity, because we won't have it again, to sort of raise a glass for our producer Adam and his lovely fiancée Kate. First of all, having welcomed baby Tans into the world, and also on their impending nuptials in the London
about
and Australia.
To jump the
so,
broom.
Yep, they're about to jump the broom in pagan parlance. So can we all raise a glass and have a taste for Adam and Kate?
And
Tansy.
Yeah.
That was a lame toast. Can you do it louder?
Do we get more glasses in the arena?
That's a bit better. That's a bit better.
Getting a bit towards the improv side of things.
Yeah. Jazz improv in a
Sound
down the knoll back story. So, yes, twitter.com/downthenollback for links to everything that's been on tonight. We're taking a couple of months off. In August and September, while we go off and do the Edinburgh Festival and Adam and Kate's wedding. But we'll be back in October for our 1 year birthday show, which is very exciting.
Wow.
We'll be having some familiar guests from the last year.
I think we'll be
back,
collecting
I
some
think,
of our favourite guests
as well
from the
as
last
some
year.
New
faces.
Friends, yes.
So we'll see you all then, last Thursday of the month in October. Hope you have a great summer and...
well, it's the LFM. Blessed be, good night.
Keep it ill and arty.
8 till midnight. Oh. You're listening to LFM.